on the Vermont Sports Network. This is the Cat's Den. Now, here is your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? It is the Cat's Den every Tuesday, 6 till 7, an hour of UVM talk, all sports from all angles. Today, a huge helping of UVM men's basketball and UVM men's hockey. You can get down in always 802-655-6672. You can do so on the Town Fair Tire text line. Again, 802-655-6672. We go up until 7 o'clock today. UVM men's hoops back on the airwaves on Wednesday. 6:30, the coverage starts against Linden. And then on Friday, the big matchup against Louisville. Yesterday was a lot of fun. Catamounts lost to Kansas. And I want a lot of your thoughts on this. So let's use the Town Fair Tire text line today. Again, 802-655-6672. Yesterday was fun. But at no point, I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off. At no point did I ever feel UVM was going to win that game last night. Catamounts were up 8 at one point. They were up 16-8. They were up 8 later in the first half. They were only down 4 at halftime. While I felt good about how UVM was playing, I never felt like the game was theirs for the taking. And I think I laid this out pretty eloquently yesterday in the huddle. If you are going to pull an upset, a massive upset, on the road against number 2 in the country, against a team that's going to contend for a national championship this year, if you are going to do that, you need to hit all 5 points in my 5-point recipe for a plan. The Catamounts hit 3 of them. And when you hit 3 of 5, that allows you to stay in the game for a half. That allows you to have an effort that we're proud of, that we're happy about. But it's not conducive to being able to win that game. I never felt like UVM was going to keep up in the second half what they did in the first. What was that 5-point plan? You need to stay out of foul trouble. UVM succeeded there. The best ability is availability, and the Catamounts got that from everybody that they needed to. Kudos to the team for being disciplined, for playing hard and smart on the defensive end, and for not playing out of control on the offensive end. That is something to, when you go back and watch film, if you're John Becker and his team, You can point that out as a positive. The second thing UVM needed to do, which they did, was hit their free throws. 13 of 17 at the line. Now, in a perfect world, you get to the line 25 times and you hit 22 of them. Didn't happen that way, but the Cats got to the line with better frequency than Kansas did, and they made a higher percentage of free throws than Kansas did. Good job again there. That's 2 of the 5. 3, your stars had to play like stars, and the Cats got that too. Anthony Lamb had 24 points. Ernie Duncan had 17. They got 13 out of Steph Smith. Your best players played like your best players. If you're going to go on the road and beat Kansas, if you're going to go on the road on Friday and beat Louisville, you can't have one of those three be in foul trouble and put up 6. You're going to get your doors blown off if that's the case. UVM didn't have that. Again, best ability is availability. They were on the court. They were able to score, and they did. Those first three things the Catamounts did, that is what allows you to be in the game for a half. Where the separator comes and why a game that was a 4-point game at the half turns into a 16-point final is pretty simple. Look no further, for me at least, than the Cats were out-rebounded by 9, and that might not seem like a huge amount to you, but when you're out-rebounded by nearly double figures, that's a problem. When the other team has 4 guys that go 6'8 or above, and they use every bit of that size and strength to overwhelm you on the glass, that's a problem. And it was a problem for UVM yesterday, especially in the second half. And the big one, the thing that was the biggest separator in the game from a UVM perspective, they didn't get that extra guy. They didn't get that fourth guy. I can say this every time. Look, I would say this before Friday. I would say this before a game in March in the tournament. If you're going to pull off something special, you need special things to happen. And this would be that fourth. This would have been that fourth guy stepping up to the plate. We told you, Lamb, great. Duncan, great. Steph Smith, great. There was nobody else. And that was the biggest thing that UVM didn't get yesterday was that extra contribution that no one was expecting. Remember last year at Kentucky? UVM scored 69 points last year against Kentucky. Drew Urquhart scored in double figures. They lose that game by 4. Drew Urquhart at the time, first game of the year, was not somebody at all that we expected to score, especially in double figures. If he doesn't do that, UVM last year scores in the 50s and they get beat by 15 to 18. He gets that extra oomph to that offense last year and they lose by 4. They didn't get that extra oomph this year. They got 14 points from their entire roster, not named Ernie Duncan, Anthony Lamb, and Steph Smith. You needed somebody to get 12, somebody to get 11. You needed two guys to get 11 and 9. It didn't happen. Go and look at a lot of great upsets in college basketball where the little guy beats the big guy, and I bet you see a consistent theme of 2 to 3 guys having great games and then that 3rd to 4th guy having a pretty good game when you weren't quite expecting it. A pretty good game when you weren't quite expecting it. 802-655-6672. You can get in on the Town Fair Tire text line all show long. And we got a couple that we're going to get to in a second. But I'm going to go check the box score right now from last year's game, UMBC against Virginia. The greatest upset in college basketball history, according to some. What did we get last year out of UMBC in that game? Well, you got Jarius Lyles had 28 points. You would expect that. KJ Mora had 10. You would have expected him as their second best player, arguably, to score. What else did you get? You got Joe Sherburn, who had 14. Wouldn't have expected that. And you get Lamar, the kind of hybrid big man, Arkel Lamar. He goes and gets double figures also. UMBC last year gets 4 guys in double figures in beating Virginia. Now, there's a lot of other reasons for the upset in that case, but look no further than the scoring as a huge reason. I mean, they absolutely go out and play really well across the board, but Joe Sherburn goes out when I wasn't expecting him to score a bunch of points, and there he is with 14 last year. That's how upsets get pulled. And then the kicker, if you're trying to pull the upset, kind of 1A, is you can't let the other team just go off. And 12 three-pointers last night for Kansas. 8 of 8 for LeGerald Vick. He scores 32 points. If you're not going to go perfect on those 5 of 5, on those 5 points I just laid out for you, you really can't afford to have the other team do something special in their own right. That's what happened yesterday. Now, I'm not as big into the narrative of people say, oh, LeGerald Vick had to have the game of his life for Kansas to beat UVM. He did have the game of his life. But did you see also that Lawson for Kansas scored 0? He was the reigning Big 12 player of the week. He scored more than 25 against Michigan State just a week ago. He scored 0 yesterday. So, yeah, Vic goes off, but Lawson got 0. So you're unlucky with Vic, lucky with Lawson. I call it even. If they both get 16, which is going to be closer to their average, you're in the exact same spot where the two of them get 32 points between them. I don't buy that too much. Town Fair Tire text line, unnamed texter gets in. I think yesterday exposed Kansas. That team will not contend for a national championship. They needed insane shooting and a 7-footer to beat a low major. They're not number 2 in the nation. That is right there what I don't believe. That right there is exactly what I don't believe. When you get a team, I mean, UVM has this game scheduled on its calendar for 6 months. The team gives them their absolute best shot. There's not a lot known about these players, even though through all the scouting and video work, Kansas doesn't know UVM like Kansas knows Duke. Bill Self's been recruiting everybody that plays for Duke for the last 4 years. He knows that team. He knows Michigan State for the same reason. He knows his conference in and out like the back of his hand. He doesn't know UVM that much. His players don't know UVM at all because they didn't play against them on the AAU circuit like they played against the guys at Duke. There's some familiarity with those programs. They know the guys at Michigan State. They know the guys at Kentucky. There's familiarity there. They're going to be there at the end. Whether they win it or not, well, fine, that's immaterial to me, but they're going to be there at the end. I thought UVM played hard. I do believe that people should be proud of them. I do believe that the Catamounts have shown they can compete on the national level. I think they've also proven from my eyes that they're not ready to play in a major conference like a lot of you want. And that's okay, too. They played well in a lot of ways. But when you hit three-fifths of my five-point plan and you allow LeGerald Vick, the team to hit 12 threes, that's where a game that's reasonably close at the half, 4 points, turns into a 16-point, what we would call a blowout. And I'm not mad about it. I'm not salty about it. I just never felt like UVM was going to win. In the first half, the Catamounts had 3 points. 3 points by people not named Ernie Duncan, Anthony Lamb, and Steph Smith. It just didn't feel sustainable ever. You just knew they couldn't keep scoring at that rate. There was no way that Ernie Duncan, Steph Smith, and Anthony Lamb were going to put up 40 between the three of them in the second half. Number one, you got to go cold at some point. Number two, was Kansas really going to allow that to happen? And they didn't. They tightened the screws and they did exactly what Kansas should do. I was still proud of them. I was still happy to watch it. They represented the conference well. They represented the area well. They represented the fans well, the university, the athletic administration, their coaching staff, and themselves. But I never thought they were going to win. It's the Cats down here on 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. My biggest takeaway was this. My biggest takeaway from just a UVM perspective, off the game itself, when you start looking at a macro, Anthony Lamb proved he is a Power 5 player. He is special. And you don't see a ton of guys like that playing in Power 5 conferences because Anthony Lamb is a junior who has really developed over his 3 years in Burlington. Well, now what is his third year? His 2 years and two games in Burlington. Because the guys at the high majors are testing the professional waters at that point. If you're going to Kansas, most players aren't staying until their junior year. A lot of them are leaving. If you're going to Duke, you're not staying until your junior year. You're leaving. You're leaving college as a talented but raw player. Anthony Lamb is going to leave college as a close-to-finished product. He can still get better wherever he plays, but he will have put in all the work to get really good right now. You just don't see a ton of high major players that are playing as juniors and seniors. Anthony Lamb is giving you that feel. He was the second best player on the floor last night. Second best player on the floor. LeGerald Vick had 32 points and was 8 of 8 from 3. He was the best player on the floor last night. Anthony Lamb was second. I don't care that Adoka Azubuike had double figures. I don't care that he had 23 and 12. That doesn't bother me in the slightest. Anthony Lamb had 24 points. And he scored in a variety of ways. We spoke about this with Bernie Siplicki, former UVM player, who was on the call for us last night with Jake Marsh. He talked about Anthony Lamb and how good he was.
You are 100% correct. At one point, Lawson, the transfer from Memphis, was just lost. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't stop him. Lamb was hitting threes, mid-range, scoring at every level, getting to the foul line, and just proved that he is a high major player, and we're lucky to have him as a Catamount.
We are lucky to have him as a Catamount. And I love what Bernie said there. Scored from every level. He shot from three well. He hit the mid-range shot. He would dribble in and drop step, and he had the great play where he pump faked in the air and took the contact and got the and one. He had the fadeaway jumper that he got the and one on. He could finish at the rim. He could finish on the low block. He could finish at the mid-range. He can hit at the foul line. And he's willing to do all that. And that is something that has really, really impressed me about Anthony Lamb, is just his continued offensive development and how he doesn't get stuck in just being happy in one mode. And what I mean by that is, when he came in as a freshman, you saw him play on the low block a lot, and he was just a bulldozer. He was going to just bulldoze you on the low block. So the next part of his game, we thought, okay, he needs to develop the outside jumper. And last year, we saw him develop the outside jumper, and you saw it towards the end, too, of his freshman year. Given that, maybe the back half of the conference season his freshman year, you started to see his game transition where he could start to go inside and outside, and he carried it over into last year, and you started thinking, okay, is he going to be a guy that maybe doesn't become perimeter-oriented but becomes a guy who is going to get jump shot happy at times? And I don't think he ever did. He stayed true to himself where he could play down low. He's willing to mix it up but could also bring it outside. And we've seen the same thing this year. He'll take the three-pointer if it's there, but he'll also take you off the dribble, one bounce left, right, and he'll drop step, spin, move, score, and the foul. He has not just gotten comfortable with his game at any point during his 3 years here, 2+ years here, and that has impressed me. Again, the Town Fair Tire text line is open, 802-655-6672. Will in Essex says, Brady, I was proud of the Catamounts. I thought they played great. I think you made some great points. I didn't think they were going to win the game going in, but they gave me a flicker of hope in that first half. I think they gave a lot of people a flicker, Will. I'm glad that you're proud of them because, again, I think that they really did represent the area well, the university well, and all the alumni well, but it just didn't feel like what they were doing was sustainable, and that's okay. There was zero expectation on my part they were going to win that game. And I'll tell you at 6:40 why I do have an expectation that they're going to beat Louisville. I do. I never thought they're going to beat Kansas. I think they go into Louisville on Friday. I think they win. I think they should expect to win, and I'm expecting them to win. But when we come back, it wasn't just basketball last night for UVM. Martin St. Louis, UVM men's hockey standout, one of the most accomplished alums in university history, takes his moment in the Hockey Hall of Fame. We speak to one of his former teammates, former NHL goalie Marc Denis. He joins us next here in the Cats Den on 101.3 The Game. 101.3 The Game. Welcome back. You're in the Cats Den on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. A proud day for Catamount Country. We spent a lot of time talking about UVM men's basketball from last night on the road against number 2 Kansas in a nationally televised game. Also a big night for UVM men's hockey. Martin St. Louis, the program's most notable alum, inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, mentioned UVM fondly in his speech. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves a guy who played with Martin St. Louis. It's longtime NHL goaltender Marc Denis. He played parts of 11 seasons in the NHL, was a first-round pick back in the draft back in the 90s, played for the Avalanche, played for the Columbus Blue Jackets with Martin St. Louis and the Lightning and the Montreal Canadiens. Marc, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate you joining us, and let's talk about this. You played for parts of 2 years with Martin St. Louis. What impact did he have on you in those parts of 2 years?
An incredible impact. First and foremost, after spending 6 years in Columbus and being traded away from a big part of my life, he was the first member of the Lightning to call. Gave me a call, welcomed me in the Lightning family, and although I had known Marty St. Louis, we hadn't had a close relationship, but from that point on, I knew I could count on an ally on my side, and his family welcomed mine into Tampa. He was a tremendous teammate, and throughout the better parts of 2 season, it's well documented. It's no secret these weren't my best years professionally, and he was always there. He was the ultimate teammate. He was there for me. We were roommates on the road. We spent a lot of time together, and he was an outstanding human being. It goes without saying, and I'm sure you can find a bunch of guests that will tell you how good he was on the ice, and he was in his prime when I played with him from 06 to 08 there, but he was a tremendous human being, and that probably counts for a lot more than what we've been able to accomplish on the ice throughout our careers.
I'm going to ask you about his on-ice ability in a second, but off what you said, I've heard a lot of people talk about what a good leader he was, being a leader of the Lightning. What kind of leader was he?
Well, he was able to be, he was capable of being vocal in the dressing room, but he was leading by example almost every day. You know, talking about his work habits, they were second to none. He wanted to get better in every single aspect of the game. He reminded me of Joe Sakic in that way. I was fortunate enough to play with Joe Sakic early in my career when I wouldn't get too many starts, and he wanted to make sure that I was on the ice half an hour before a regular practice. He wanted to get inside the head, the mind of a goalie, and try to improve his wrist shot. Marty St. Louis was the same way. Martin would ask me to step on the ice earlier or stay after a regular practice when I wasn't playing, and he wanted to, you know, to get inside a goalie's mind and see how he could find ways to trick us goalies and why we would stay on our left post a little longer than our right post because of the blocker and the glove. He wanted to understand and work at the game in every single aspect. As he grew a little older and maybe speed wasn't his forte anymore, he wanted to get better in close, tight areas with his skills. He was just, you know, work habits were second to none, and that's how you lead in the NHL.
It's well documented that he overcame his size, just 5'8", to become a great goal scorer, also a great assist man, great playoff resume. What made him so good from an on-ice perspective, as you talked about?
Well, he was really, really strong on the puck. He was small, but his physical strength was was pretty impressive. The physical aspect of the game, although he did play early in the 2000s, wouldn't bother him at all. Wouldn't deter his game, and actually he'd probably thrive. We've seen the playoff run. We've seen the big important goals that he's scored. He was strong on the puck, and as I said, he was such a student of the game. He's played with some great centermen. He touched on that during his Hall of Fame induction speech yesterday. And you know what? He took full advantage of it. He would have some set plays. I remember him on the power play, 5-on-3. He would always tell everybody, I'll waste one really early on the power play. Make sure you retrieve it, and we'll keep everybody honest. He was a student of the game. In every aspect, nothing was left to chance for Marty St. Louis. And that's how, that's part of the answer of how he overcame smaller stature to play the NHL with some much bigger men.
I guess I have a two-part question wrapped up in one. Martin is 2 years older than you. You're both from Quebec. So did you hear about Martin St. Louis growing up? And what's his impact been on hockey in Quebec?
Of course, we'd heard of Martin St. Louis. We did not get a chance to play against each other in minor hockey, but I saw him play. I saw him play all the way up through his 3L, the midget AAA ranks, and hearing that he and Éric Perrin would move on to the U.S. and play for UVM and the Catamounts eventually, everybody kept a close eye on them, and especially on Marty. Well, the impact is, it goes beyond Quebec. It goes beyond territory. I think he's actually given smaller players a dream to hang on to. I think the best part of his speech yesterday, and I tweeted it out, is, if all doors are closing, find a window and get in.
Yeah.
And that was Marty St. Louis. That's the impression he's left on Quebec. I got a chance to meet his parents when we were playing. They got great family values, and definitely somebody I looked up to. He was only 2 years older, but he was outstanding to me, to my family, and to our teammates. When I was a teammate of his with Lightning.
Marc Denis, former NHL goaltender, played parts of 11 years in the league, played with four different teams. He's here with us on the Cats Den on 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. I want to venture off to another guy who got inducted yesterday, and that's NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.
Yep.
How do players feel about Gary Bettman?
Well, he locked me out. You just mentioned 11 years. I probably could have played 12 if
yeah.
he didn't lock me out a full year. So mixed feelings there. I will be honest, and I'm not gonna put my head in the sand and not realize that he's grown the game, and this is a 31 league team now. When I entered it was just 26, so he's grown the game exponentially in a lot of markets. He's stuck around in non traditional markets, and some of them have been success stories. He's found some really good owners, and hockey related revenues have grown ever since. So there's no denying that. I'm not sure he's the best at delivery for his speech yesterday, although he tried to incorporate some humor there. At the same time, he's part of the Builders. Could they have waited until he was done? Maybe, perhaps. So I got mixed feelings because, that 1 year that he locked me out, well, I'll never get back. So that's the one thing that probably sticks.
I wanted to ask you about this because here in this region, we got a lot of Boston Bruins fans. We are a Bruins affiliate. A guy who's really playing well for the Bees this year is Yaroslav Halak in goal, and you played with Halak at the end of your
yeah.
career. What makes him so good? Because he's been really good for Boston this year.
Yeah, he has been, and I think he comes in a great situation. I understand that for Tuukka Rask, everything is not rosy, and I'm sure he'll get back to his elite ways, but Yaroslav Halak is an outstanding goalie that can come in and help out. To be a number one goalie is not really worked out for him. I'm talking about a top end number one goalie, but he's definitely a top end, number two goalie backup that can play very well as a number one for long stretches and long periods of time. So when you put that together, I'm not surprised to see the success he's having. He's had success playing for some good teams as well. Boston has a good team, and I strongly believe that until Tuukka Rask finds his ways, he could be not only a great solution, but he can be a very valuable player for the Bruins organization. And, we've seen, we're talking about, Marty St. Louis with a smaller stature. Here's probably one of the smaller goalies in the NHL, but, playing really big. And that's what I remember and I still observe and see from Yaro Halak.
I wanted to ask you about this. I was reading an article the other day in The Athletic that mentioned Carey Price and Henrik Lundqvist kind of being the last of a dying breed, where they are your best and highest paid players. That kind of the idea of the franchise goaltender is kind of going away because the league is so skewing toward offense. What do you make when you hear something like that?
Yeah, and at the same time, when you do have an elite or a top 10 goalie, you do need to make a tough decision. And you know, I'm not going to say it's a can't-win situation, but you need to tie up with a lot of money towards that goalie because he's had so much success, or let him go. And, you know, talk to the Philadelphia Flyers, talk to some organizations that haven't had goalies that can bring them to the next level, and they'll tell you that goalie is the most important position. You know, I think it is part of how, you know, this salary cap era has worked. Definitely, you know, stats are being skewed towards the offense. I think we're seeing more goals this year. It seems like it's more sustainable this year, that there will be more goals scored. So it's always interesting, you know, from the Montreal standpoint, where, you know, I follow the Canadiens, and it's a different story because they're not close to the cap. It might be a tougher go when a team has a lot of money locked up into a goalie and they're really, you know, tied up and handcuffed because they're so close to the cap.
I want to get you out of here on this. We talk a lot about possible NHL expansion. It looks like Seattle is all set to get a team. The market that we're looking for in this area is to see if Quebec gets another team. You know, the Nordiques left back in the 90s. Do you think Quebec could support an NHL team, and do you want to see one back in addition to just the Canadiens?
They have a great building, and they have a great fan base. Now, obviously, the money will talk. Seattle geographically makes a lot of sense for all the right reasons, and the money is there as well. You know, once everything is settled and there's a 32-team league, and everything is, well, I'm not going to say set in stone, but you have your balance throughout the conferences, then maybe you can think about, you know, a team in Quebec. I'd like to see it for no other reason that, you know, obviously the province, the fan base, the proximity to a lot of the markets, the Torontos, the Ottawas, the Bostons, and obviously the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
I think it would make for an outstanding rivalry on the ice, but I understand there's financial and economic factors that go into such a decision, and, you know, I don't have enough info to tell you, but, Montreal Canadiens play exhibition games, preseason games every year in that building, and it's an NHL-ready building.
Longtime NHL goaltender Marc Denis, 11 years in the league, and a former teammate of Martin St. Louis, newly inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So a proud day for those in Catamount Country. We appreciate the time. We appreciate the perspective on Martin St. Louis and the rest of the league as well. Marc, thank you so much. We'll do it again.
Thanks for having me on the show. Take care.
Absolutely. There he goes, Marc Denis. 11 years an NHL goaltender. Would have been 12 if not for Gary Bettman, he reminds us as well, because of the lockout. Yeah, great stuff. First and foremost, congratulations to Martin St. Louis. Again, if you want to get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, you can. We had a lot of people get in on Facebook, especially yesterday, leaving well wishes for St. Louis, saying how much they enjoyed watching him and Eric Perrin back in the 90s. St. Louis, incredibly complimentary of his time at UVM, complimented his coaching staff, also talked about meeting his wife at UVM as well, so certainly a profound impact on his life. And you know, if you follow St. Louis, if you follow the Catamounts, you know how closely connected to the program he still is. He's still up in the area every so often. We talked with him just a couple of months ago. I think right after the announcement came that he was going to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame. And, you know, I love hearing that when Marc Denis just says he had a tremendous impact on me. He was my roommate on the road. He was there when I was going through some tough times in Tampa. And Marc Denis played well in Columbus, did not play well in Tampa for the most part, and he alluded to that. And Martin St. Louis was the guy who was there for him. And at a level where we know that it's all about winning and it's all results-based, sometimes you forget that these are people and it's nice to have good people around you. And Martin St. Louis was that. And for him to say that he's a better person than he was a player, and we're talking about a guy who I think is one of three players ever under 5'8 to hit 1,000 career points. He's the Lightning's all-time leader in assists and all-time leader in playoff goals and assists. I mean, this is an accomplished player in Martin St. Louis, and to hear he's a better player or a better person than a player, that speaks volumes. And I enjoy talking to Marc Denis. We're going to talk to him again for sure whenever we want to talk about hockey. I hear you out there, people who want us to talk more and more hockey. So this one was for you, and this week was for you with Martin St. Louis, and we will get Marc Denis on some more as well. So 11-year veteran Marc Denis with us on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, and that interview will be available in full on 1013thegame.com after the show. Town Fair Tire text line on basketball. Everyone swooned over UVM due to a close loss to number 4 Kentucky in last year's opener. That game showed Kentucky, let's see, that game showed Kentucky just was a fluke because they went on to have a disappointing regular season, 26-11 overall, although they got hot late and made it to the Sweet 16. Kansas isn't that good. I think Kansas is going to be there at the end. I think Kansas has won the Big 12 regular season 12 or 13 consecutive years, maybe every year that Bill Self has been there. They've been in the Final Four each of the last 2 years. Now, they're young at the guard position. I think they've got two freshmen starting in the backcourt, but when you go four guys over 6'8", when you go a seven-footer and a seven-footer who's now making his free throws in Azubuike, I believe Kansas is going to be there at the end. So, look, come back to me in March if Kansas ends up going 10-8 in the Big 12, but I'm not buying that that's going to happen. When we come back, UVM didn't beat Kansas. I'll tell you why I think they're going to beat Louisville. That's next on the Cat's Den on 101.3 The Game. Welcome back. It is the Cat's Den right here on 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. We do this every single Tuesday from 6 until 7, a full hour of Catamount Athletics Talks, all sports from all angles. Today, a lot of UVM hoops. Cats lose on the road at Kansas yesterday, and a lot of UVM hockey as Martin St. Louis inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame last night. A great speech. So you can find the whole thing 10 minutes in length on our website, 1013thegame.com. Town Fair Tire text line is open, 802-655-6672, and you can get in with your thoughts on that. I never felt UVM was going to beat Kansas. I do feel they're going to beat Louisville. And it's early in the season, so it's hard to extrapolate things based on just one game. But Louisville had a tough time with Nichols. Nichols is not as good as Vermont. They won by 13, 85 to 72. I look at this game for a couple of reasons as a game that's winnable for UVM. Number one, Louisville's not ranked. They're flat out not as good as they have been. Okay, they're not ranked. In fact, in terms of the teams that are receiving votes for, you know, being ranked in the AP top 25, they're kind of in the middle of the pack of teams that are receiving votes. They received 8 votes for the poll this week. They are a upper middle of the pack team in the ACC. That kind of team is beatable. Two, maybe you catch them in a trap game. They're playing Tennessee, who's number 5, after they play Vermont. So maybe you can catch them there. But really, bottom line is, I saw a Louisville team last year, and Louisville's been through the ringer as a program. Okay? This is a team, you know, Rick Pitino fired, the program shamed, kind of the prostitution ring, that kind of stuff, guys to get, you know, ways to recruit people on campus. This program has been shamed. Chris Mack, the old coach at Xavier, is in there now, and by and large, I think he'll do a great job. I just don't think he's ready to do a great job yet with what he has and what this program has been through and the limitations that have been placed upon it by the NCAA. And I look at this and I say, Louisville would have, could have, should have lost last year at home to Albany. And that was an Albany team that Vermont was far better than. Now, last year's Vermont team is better than this year's Vermont team. Absolutely, 100%. Last year's Vermont team is better than this year's team. But I look at, I think this year's Vermont team could have beaten last year's Albany team if we're comparing the two. And Albany should have won that game. They were up with a minute to go. They had multiple looks inside the last 20 seconds to win that game and ended up losing. I absolutely think that Vermont can go into Louisville and win on Friday night. I absolutely do, because I expect that Anthony Lamb is, again, going to be one of the top players on the floor. I expect, again, that Ernie Duncan's going to shoot well. I expect, again, that Steph Smith is going to play well. I believe that your three stars are going to play like stars. And I feel like this is a matchup where you can get that fourth guy in there, whether it's Isaiah Moll, whether it's Everett Duncan, somebody else that can step up and score. Look also at what Louisville did against Nichols. Again, it's hard to extrapolate from one game. Louisville only hit 5 threes. Kansas hit 12 the other day. Kansas hit 12 last night. Louisville shot 33% against Nichols. They were 5 of 15 from 3. If UVM can keep them to a similar percentage there, UVM has a good chance to win this game. Nichols hit 12 threes against Louisville. They were 12 of 31. They fired a lot of threes. That's what UVM wants to do. They want to get up and down. They want to make it a track meet, and they want to fire up a bunch of threes. And I trust that they can hit, that if they shoot 31, that they got a chance to hit 12 also, and I think they're going to play better defense. Louisville's not overly big. They had 4 players in double figures in that win against Nichols. Only one of them is 6'8 or above. They got one at 6'10, and the rest are hovering in the, you know, I mean, let's look at it right here. They got 4 guys in double figures.
Okay, I'll tell you the heights that those players go right now. Again, Enoch, the big man, he goes 6'10". Other than that, they had a 6'2 guard get double figures. They had a 6'6 forward get double figures. And a 6'0 guard get double figures. So they're much more guard-oriented than Kansas was. They're not as long as Kansas was. I think UVM matches up better with Louisville. I just feel like if UVM is going to win a game against a Power 5 conference team, Louisville is ripe for the picking for them. Louisville also has three graduate transfers on their roster. So, yeah, they have some experience in terms of guys that have played college basketball before. Not a lot of guys that have played together, though, under Chris Mack. This is a roster that is coming together still. This will be game three of the season. Louisville plays Southern tonight. I'll be interested in seeing what they do. I know it's not a ranked game, and people are looking for UVM to beat a ranked team. I'm looking for them to beat a Power 5 team, for a team that, say what you want about Rick Pitino, in my mind, I know they had to take it away, but a team that's played in and won national championship games. I think UVM can, will, and should win that game on Friday night. All right, let's step outside here. When we come back, I want to get to something that Martin St. Louis said yesterday in his Hall of Fame speech. That's next on the Cats 10 right here on 101.3 The Game. 101.3 The Game. Final segment, Cats Den, right here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Town Fair Tire text line is still open, 802-655-6672. I want to get to this. The last thing said yesterday by Martin St. Louis as he exited the stage at the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. His exact quote was this. Again, the whole speech is online on our website. His last words: follow your dreams. Believe in yourself. When it seems like all the doors are closing, look for a window and find a way in. The reason some people don't reach their full potential is because they quit too soon, and maybe, most importantly, be a good teammate both on the ice and in life. It was kind of his advice to the younger generation of hockey players. I love that quote, simply put. And I don't mean to sound like a walking Hallmark card or I'm not a motivational speaker, but when you hear Martin St. Louis say that, it really resonates with me, and I think it should resonate with a lot of people. Follow your dreams, believe in yourself. When it seems like all the doors are closing, look for a window and find a way in. And I started thinking about my own life, my own career. When did it feel like opportunities were being, or I was being shut out from opportunities, and how did I overcome them? And I started thinking to myself, did I operate with the same thought process as Martin St. Louis? And I think that I did, and I'm sure a lot of us in our own lives have faced similar obstacles and have been able to overcome them because simply getting in the door. I remember when I was trying to be a college baseball coach. That's what I wanted to be first. A lot of you who have listened for a while know that about me. I was trying to be a college baseball coach, and it just felt like it was never going to happen. It was never going to happen. It was never going to happen. And I found my way in. $1,500 a year I made to coach college baseball. But I got in the door. I got in the club, and that turned into me networking and meeting these people and working this camp. And I met Brian Kane, the UVM graduate, who is the most revered sports psychologist in the game right now, working with, you know, a number of top 25 ranked athletic programs, and it allowed me to meet him. And I met his mentor, Ken Revisa, the original master of sports psychology, and I started learning so much, and it was all because I was able to get myself in the door. $1,500 a year. I spent more money in gas getting into the ballpark for that year, probably, than I did by actually coaching, you know, than I did by actually making money to coach baseball. And then I think about radio, too. And in this business, I was in the door in that I had a job, but it started by my job was to press one button, work from 6 to 10 a.m., a time slot that nobody wanted, to do a job that nobody wanted, press one button and just sit there, essentially. But just being in the door allowed me an opportunity to get in front of people and start doing this interview, and start doing that interview, and start writing for the website, and start managing social media. That became important to me, and that became something that no one else was doing, and that was the reason why I was able to turn 6 to 10 a.m. for $9 an hour in Albany, New York, into a full-time career here in Burlington, Vermont, just 4 years later. And I'm proud of that. Martin St. Louis is proud of that. And I'm sure everyone out there is proud of that, because a lot of you, most of you, probably all of you, have been in that situation. So those words yesterday by Marty St. Louis, they really resonated with me, because I thought about it and I thought to myself, he's right. When the door is closing, find a way in. And he's right, too. Most people quit before they get their big break. And it was hard when I was making $9 an hour. I was working three jobs, making a cumulative $17,000 a year at 26 years old. Or 20, maybe 25, about to be 26. But $17,000 a year I was making over three or four jobs. And it was hard. And I think about, man, maybe just go be in business. Try to find something in business and make 50 grand and call it a day. I guess I could have done that, but I didn't. I couldn't be more happy to be where I am now. So good for Martin St. Louis. Good words to live by. He was very complimentary of his time in Burlington as well. He loves Vermont. He's shown that over and over again. He talked highly about it. All right, that will do it for us. Thanks to Rich and Arnie in the huddle. Always, you can hear us tomorrow, 3 until 6 p.m. Also in the Cats Den, special thanks to Marc Denis, former longtime NHL goaltender and teammate of Martin St. Louis, for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. We'll see you next week for the Cats Den right here on your home for Catamount Basketball, 101.3 The Game.
Morgan Stanley knows that building relationships begins with getting to know each and every client. Everyone has different goals, from planning for retirement to saving for a child's education. Morgan Stanley's financial advisors can create personal investment strategies to help meet your financial needs. For more information, call the Morgan Stanley Colchester office at 658-2424. That's 658-2424. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC, member SIPC.
Hey, hockey fans, it's Matt from Zero Gravity Craft Brewery. There's one thing I've learned through my love of playing and watching sports. It's that win or lose, I always enjoy myself. But we all know that winning is a whole lot more fun than losing. I think the same can be said about beer. Drinking beer is usually fun, but drinking really good beer is a whole lot more fun. Just like winning. You follow? Give Zero Gravity a try, and let's keep winning together. Cheers from Zero Gravity. And remember, please enjoy responsibly. Go Cats.
Out fan, out chant, out number.